The Beer EDU Podcast, Episode 128, Canvas LMS with Dana Cuny and Andrea Earle. Welcome to the Beer EDU Podcast, the podcast for educators that love to learn and share ideas with fellow educators over beers, with your hosts, Kyle Anderson and Ben Dixon.
Kyle, what is up, my friend?
Hey, buddy. How you doing, Ben?
I am good. It is another episode, Beer EDU Pod. This is episode 128, I believe.
It is indeed episode 128. And if this is the Beer EDU Podcast, that means I am Kyle Anderson, a special education teacher in Las Vegas. Soon to be something different, though. I can talk about that more here in a second, since it is the end of the school year, and I mean, I could have announced it a long time ago. You know what?
Right.
I'll just talk about it real quick.
All right.
I am not going to be in the classroom next year. I am going to be what is called a special education instructional facilitator, which is for those of you that are unaware, I am going to
That's what they call it in the classroom.
I am going to be the LEA for IEP meetings. I am going to make sure that the documents are up to legal standards, you could say,
right,
in preparation for meetings. I will be the one to help mediate issues in meetings. If we have to go into some sort of due process, I will be the representative in that. So, my school, my current CEF, we call it for short because we don't feel like saying the whole title all the time. She'll still be there. I'm going to be a second one because we are going to have over 400 students with IEPs in my school next year. A little bit much for one person. So that is going to be my new position starting next year. So thank you very much. Hasn't quite hit me yet, even though today as we're recording this, this is our last day of school. So tomorrow is graduation from when we're recording this. And I have my summer break here starting up. So, but enough about me. Let's talk a little bit about who you are, sir.
Ben Dixon. You can find me on social media at BDixonNV and my Untappd tag if you're on there, BDixonNV. We'll go back to Kyle because Kyle forgot to plug all his stuff.
I totally did. I forgot to talk about
the new job. I'm so excited about the new job. I will have the same job, so I will continue to be an administrator principal in my district. So, Kyle, and you are beyond being a person with a new position. Where can people find you, Matt?
Yes, they can find me on Twitter, Instagram, at AndersonEdTech. My blog is AndersonEdTech.net. I'm on both Untappd for beer at AndersonEdTech and also on Peloton for working off said beer at AndersonEdTech. And then I have my book, To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk-Taking. You can find that on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. And I can't remember if I talked about this in a previous episode. Maybe I did, but I also, for School Rubric, recently wrote an article for their Global Educational Insights magazine on teacher burnout and retention. So if you go to schoolrubric.org, you can find that article there. And then EdTech Magazine also named me as one of the top 30 IT influencers for 2022, which I did not know was coming. And that was quite the surprise when that happened. So I was very excited and very humbled at the same time for that to happen. So, but since this is the Beer EDU Podcast, we drink beers and it is time for beer. And I'll let you explain why you need a beer right now because of some recent events, but go tell us a little bit about this beer. This is a really cool sounding name for beer.
So this beer is from a local brewery here in Reno. It's called Shush Boom. Shush Boom Brewing, and it is their single track sender. So it is a farmhouse ale, a saison. It is 6.9% ABV, 25 IBU, and it's and I didn't purposely choose this one for this reason, but I was recently involved. Well, as you're listening to this, when we're recording this, I still haven't gone back to work because I just got out of the hospital with a broken collarbone, some broken ribs, and just a very small hole in my lung. And so I was in the hospital for a bit, wrecked my mountain bike. Maybe going a little bit too fast. So that's it. But I'm super psyched to, by the time people are listening to this, I'll have already been in school to finish out my year. So that's my beer.
Well, it's a cool story, at least, you know. I mean, it's not like it's not like you were sleepwalking, fell down the stairs or something. That would be a terrible story.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it was there was a guy coming up who saw it and he was like, "Oh my God, are you okay?" And I was like, at the time I was like, "Yeah, I think I'm okay." And then then a little bit later I was like, "No, I'm not really okay. I might need to go to the hospital." But it happens, and it's what happens when you ride bikes. So Kyle, what do you have for us?
I have another Austin Brothers brew from my hometown of Alpena, Michigan. This time it's the Paralyzer Double IPA. So my only way to describe this is this one brings the boom. It's not a lawnmower beer by any means.
Yes.
9.7% ABV. Yep. So it is kicked up pretty good. And then the IBU is what gets you. This one is 100 IBU.
Yep. Century mark.
Yes. So this one, it used to be 100 IBU used to be the top end. That was like, you didn't go beyond that. And I mean, you're getting beers now that are in the 120 IBU range, but this one leaves a little fur on the tongue after drinking it. So, but no, it's really good. It's got, it's earthy, it's piney, it's a little citrusy. Yeah, definitely heavy duty though. So, you will not be mowing the lawn with this beer right here. So, no, it's definitely a good one though. So, and I'm actually going to be in my hometown so I can go get this stuff fresh from the tap at Austin Brothers here. In about a month from when we're recording this, I'll be there. So looking forward to it. I haven't been back to my hometown in a couple of years, and I haven't been to that brewery in about 6 years. So I'm looking forward to getting back there for that.
Right on. Well, we've discussed ourselves, but we have some guests. We have two guests this time.
Yes. So one less than we had last time. We had three last time. So we only have two this time. True. So, but we have with us tonight, we have Dana Cuny, we have Andrea Earl. So ladies, how are we doing today?
How are you?
Oh, last day of school. I'm doing fantastic.
There we go.
Well, I'm doing good. I've got another week though with the kids and then another week for myself, but wrapping things up.
Yeah, light at the end of the tunnel there. Very nice. So now we were talking a little bit about drinks that we have here. So the two of you also have drinks. So now, Dana, you're right up by me and Ben's alley here. Not beer, but something very nice. What do you got?
So I just found out that my good friend Kyle is also a connoisseur of the old fashioned.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Me too. So, I love him.
I'm a whiskey drinker, so we actually met up for our GAG Nevada end of the year meetup, and we went to a whiskey bar, and me and Kyle shared an old fashioned, and I have been stuck on them ever since. So I have an old fashioned with the regular bitters and the orange bitters, and then it's mixed with Heaven's Door Highway 61 blend whiskey. It's a rye bourbon mix. And then I can't remember the name of the cherries, but they're not the regular maraschinos. I'll have to look it up.
Oh, you probably got those nice brandy soaked ones or something like that. Oh.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I'll make one for you next time you're over.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. So, yeah. So that being said, yes, Dana is local to my area. So we do see each other in person on occasion. So, and then just to be clear, we didn't share an old fashioned. We each got our own that day. So it wasn't like, you know, the 50s sock hop where, like, you know, we had two straws with one old fashioned or something like that. We did have our own. So, but now, Andrea, so you with the beer out though. So, and you've got something that I'm a little intrigued by. So what do you have?
So I have a BJ's Jeremiah Red. It's an Irish style ale. And I'll be honest, I know nothing about beer. I don't drink very often. I pretty much drink when my son pops a beer, I'll taste it. And if I like it, I'll pour a little bit off for myself. So I asked him what I should grab for the podcast. And he said that he had one of these in the fridge. So I'm trying it. I actually like it. So, and I know nothing else about it.
Well, lucky for you, I did the research for you. So it is 7.3% ABV and 25 IBU. And yes, it is an Irish red ale.
Yep.
It is from, I see it's from that BJ's Brew House, that restaurant chain. So I have not been to one of those in years. So I honestly, I know I've had some of their beers before. I don't know if I've ever had this one or not.
Yeah.
So and I honestly didn't know you could buy them to take home either.
That's what I didn't know. I didn't know that they canned them. That is interesting.
Yeah, I have no idea where he got it. He just you know, picks up stuff wherever he is. And
yeah, cool.
Brought it home. So there.
Nice.
But I do have a coaster from our local brewery, Gamecraft Brewing.
I've heard of that place. Or wait, maybe I'm thinking of another one. Gamecraft. Or no, I'm thinking of 8-Bit. That's the one I was thinking of. That's Southern California somewhere. But I'm sure Gamecraft is probably a high-quality one, too. So,
well, the beer's good, but also they have game nights. So, like, tonight's trivia night. Mm, and right. Tuesdays they do, like, Jenga and Sorry and old-style games. So it's kind of a fun place.
Nice. So, you can never go wrong. You can never go wrong with bar games at a brewery. So, right on. So, well, welcome both of you to
Thanks for being here.
So, man, taking out some time here, especially on the last day of school for you, Dana. I mean, you and I both were like, we scheduled this out. I'm like, wait, that's the last day of school. So, like, do we really want to do this? But no, I mean, I know for me at least, I still got to go in the morning for a few hours and then graduation. Well, so,
I start teaching virtual summer school next Tuesday, and I'll be curriculum writing on Canvas all summer long. So, It's a break, but I'm still working.
Yeah. It's a break from what you were doing to something new.
Right.
Well, before we go any further, though, let's learn a little bit more about both of you, like who you are and what you do in education, kind of like your story, how you got there. So so since we started with Dana with the whiskey sour, or excuse me, not a whiskey sour, an old fashioned, excuse me. Don't ruin your whiskey by maybe putting the sour mix. Jeez. So, but Andrea, we'll have you go first. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, where you're at, you know, kind of how you're the Andrea Earle Cliff Notes story of education.
The Cliff Notes. Well, I am currently working as an instructional coach for the Santa Ana Unified School District, which is in Santa Ana, California. I am a 38-year educator, and yes, I am. And I kind of fell into education by accident. I was, I had nothing to take my senior year at UCLA at all electives. And my dad's like, well, do something you can get a job at. And I'd been working as a TA in an elementary school. I'm like, well, this is kind of fun. So I took the teaching program, graduated, went to graduate school and had to make money. So started subbing and loved it. So dumped graduate school. And I've been teaching ever since. So I've done about 15 years in elementary and the rest, most of it in middle school. I am a math teacher at heart, so I love math, but I've always been like an early adopter. You know, when modems came out, I asked my principal, you know, and that was Fred Mail, for those of you old enough. I asked my principal, can I get a modem in my classroom? I want my kids to do Fred Mail. And she goes, I don't know what that is, but sure. So she put a phone line in my classroom. My kids were, you know, typing on a green screen to people around the world. So it was pretty fun. So I've always kind of just, you know, here, you want to try this? Sure. Why not? You know, hey, there's a grant to write. You want to write a grant? Sure. I'll do it. You know, so that's how I got involved in Q, is because I just, you know, there was a grant to write and I needed to do a little research. They sent me to this conference and that was back in the 90s, early 90s, I guess. And just keep going ever since. So now I'm a Google certified trainer. I am a Canvas certified educator, which I'm actually very proud of because it's a hard, it's six courses and it's like doing another master's, but so worth it. So worth it. I don't know what else. So yeah, here I am. And
that's incredible. And I gotta say, I don't want this to come out wrong, but I think you may hold the record for longest career in education of any guest we've had in all of our episodes. So that's incredible. So, and I think I've only met one person in my local area that approached that many years before retiring. And that person did 37 years, retired, but then came back as administrator and they're still going. So I think they're at like year 47 at this point or something like that. So,
I'm still too young to retire, but as long as I'm, technically I guess I'm too young to retire, but as long as I'm having fun. And I got a new job a couple of years ago during the pandemic, that pulled me out of the classroom again. I've been in and out of the classroom. And, you know, so I'm having fun as long as I'm having fun. Oh, and I am currently serving as president of Orange County Q. So I want to give a plug to all my Q peeps out there.
Awesome. Yes, indeed. We obviously love Q on this, this podcast. So now, well, thank you, Andrea. So now, Dana, how about you? Let's talk a little bit about you.
Well, I am less than half of Andrea's years. I just finished year 16. I am a math teacher at heart, but yeah, I've always been the nerd in the department who was like, let's try this. Let's do this. So, ooh, sorry about that. I am a Google certified educator and trainer, and I'm actually following in Andrea's footsteps. I'm in the middle of the Canvas certified educator classes. I'm on core two. I'll be done October-ish. So yeah, it's like getting a mini master's, but it's great. I am the leader of GEG Nevada, and I'm a leader in Global GEG, which is the Google Educator Group, if you guys don't know. I am not in Q because we don't have a Q affiliate right now, but I am totally going to just hang out with Orange County Q.
Come on
whenever
over.
I can. But yeah, that's me.
Awesome. And, you know, all this talk about Canvas, this is kind of what brought this together, was yes. Because I know, Dana, you and I went to Spring Q in Palm Springs a few months ago. And then, Ben, you were not there, but you no. were kind of living vicariously through the hashtag
yes.
when we were all there. And then, you know, and then, Andrea, I know that we had interacted before online, but we met for the first time at Q.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And I believe the conversation kind of steered towards Andrea saying something along the lines of, I love Canvas and I love the Beer EDU podcast. I would love to come out and talk. And then Dana's like, oh, can I do that too? Like, well, why don't we have both of you come on?
So there we go.
So kind of here we are now. So now I kind of know, like, Dana, how you got into Canvas, because it was right. almost a necessity, because here in Nevada, really, except for Washoe where Ben's at, do you guys use Canvas?
Not for students. No, we don't.
Yeah. No, Washoe no. kind of does.
I used Canvas I used Canvas as an instructor when I, because I've taught classes for my district and I used it. But I don't, you know what? And I could be wrong though, but I work in an elementary school, so I don't know what they use. I mean, we're a Microsoft district, so a lot of our stuff is through Teams and those things.
Yeah. But, you know, with Dana and I, it was kind of almost a necessity, because that was where our district and most other districts in the state of Nevada went, especially during the pandemic. So I kind of want to talk to you a little bit first, Andrea, about how did you get started with Canvas, and like how long ago, like what really kind of thrust you into the world of using Canvas with your students?
Well, I've always been done kind of a blended classroom way back in the day when I was doing QR codes and laser disc players. I've always done kind of blended. So I was always finding ways to deliver links to my students, right? Because typing in those URLs is just impossible. And I probably started with like a document that I shared with them and they would click on a link, I think. And then I tried, I used a wiki for years. I used, wiki spaces, I think. And then I tried Edmodo. And then my district started talking about, and I tried Angel for a little while, which was awful.
Oh, right? Whoa, I haven't heard of that one. What was that?
Super cumbersome, but yeah.
Okay, good enough.
So I dropped that. But so I was using different websites. I kind of liked Edmodo. And then my district started looking into buying an LMS. I'm like, perfect, this is great. So some teachers at my school who were also forward thinking and forward, I don't know, acting, we divvied up the options, and the one I chose didn't get selected. So the next year we still hadn't adopted, but I started using Canvas. I think that was 2015. And I'll be honest, I'm really glad that the one I piloted did not get adopted, because Canvas is so much better. And it keeps getting better. Whereas the other one, they haven't done an update in years. Whereas Canvas, they keep pushing. I mean, every month there's deploy notes and updates. And so it just keeps getting better and better. And they're very responsive and lots of support for teachers. And, you know, so I guess it's been 2015, 16, I think was my first year. So, but you don't want to look at my classes from back then. They were terrible.
Comparatively. Well, that's like the early episodes of the Beer EDU podcast.
Yeah, it's all right.
How much you want to go back and listen to those ones. So,
yeah, but experimenting. But Dana, yeah. So Dana, how did you get involved in it then?
Well, I totally learned backwards. You guys are talking about, you know, old episodes of Beer EDU. It's the same thing with my old Canvas courses. It was sink or swim. So we had to throw something together. And I luckily I caught on fairly quickly and much more quickly than other people. And I started building courses and I started getting, I was doing the online learning with our virtual school. So I had to build courses and I wouldn't say I ever got good at it, but I got better than everybody else. So that's kind of what it takes. But now, yeah, you go back to those first courses and you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even use the accessibility checker. That's so terrible. Why was I using tables? But you learn that stuff. And you know, one of the best things you can do to learn if you're doing anything right, ask the kids. Mm-hmm. They're brutally honest. They mm-hmm. will tell you, you know, I did not know what I was doing in that module, Miss Cooney. You need to redo that one quickly. Mm-hmm. And I got some great advice. I'm just going back and cleaning up my courses now because my student said, Miss Cooney, it would be really great if you provided a page with extra resources so we could keep learning or if we don't get it. So I'm like, great. So that's what I'm working on right now. I'm going back through cleaning up my courses for the fall and adding extra resources.
Yeah, and I mean, I can vouch for that because, again, the district that we work with, I mean, honestly, though, we had Canvas for several years in our district, but it wasn't something that was, I don't want to say forced upon us, but it wasn't like a mandatory thing until really the pandemic time. So, but because I remember toying with it a few years ago. But at the time, I was using Google Classroom, and you know, at the time, Google Classroom worked for me, and it was something that worked for me. It worked for my students, and the complaints I had about it at the time, speaking to a Google rep, they said that yes, we are a little feature deficient at this time, but we are right. You know, always improving, and Google Classroom did improve. But so when I dabbled with Canvas at the time, it was something that I'm like, well, what I can do with Canvas is great, but I'm already kind of doing this with Google right. Classroom. Why do I need to go and do this now? But then it became where, oh, you have to do this. But I kind of already knew because I had dabbled before. So it kind of came a little bit easier to me as well. So I doubt I'm on the level that you are, Dana, because in my position, I'm not using it nearly as much. It's my gen ed teacher that I was working with that was doing a lot of work, but I mean, I still know a lot of the ins and outs where, like, if she asked me to go in and, hey, can you reopen a test for a student? Absolutely. I can do that within 3 seconds. So, but you know what, we're talking all this technical jargon already with it, but there may be listeners that, what are you even talking about? So, and this could be open to either one of you. It doesn't matter. Like, brief, like, synopsis, like, what are we even talking about at this point? Like, what is Canvas, and like, is there a comparison besides Google Classroom that we can throw out there?
So, well, Canvas is an LMS, a learning management system. It's a way to create and deliver content to your students in an organized way. And it's funny, I was actually using Canvas before Google Classroom was a thing, so I never used Google Classroom until the beginning of this current school year, and I had to sub in a fifth grade virtual class before the teacher was hired. And I'm a team player, so I used Google Classroom like the other fifth grade teachers were using. I wanted to kill myself. It was horrible. I'm like, I want to do this. Oh, you can't do that in Google Classroom. I want to do this. You can't do that.
But Canvas, okay, wait a second.
What?
Canvas was around before Classroom was?
Yes.
That's news to me.
I think Canvas has been around since like 2012, maybe.
Yeah, and I distinctly remember Google Classroom coming out in 2014. Yeah. And that was when it, and I kind of, when it came out, I had been trying, like you, Andrea, I tried different things over time. I tried doing a Google site. I yeah. tried just doing a shared Google Calendar. I don't remember. I feel like I tried Edmodo at one time and didn't really like it. I'm like, this looks way yeah. too much like Facebook.
Right.
Know? And it was just kind of, it was kind of weird to me.
Yeah, we toyed with Edmodo. As a teacher, I used it.
It was the best thing going at the time.
At the time, yeah.
At the time,
yeah.
Way, you know.
Right. So, but yeah, and then Canvas, it was around 2015. It was the first time I toyed with it. So, yeah, I know it's been around at least that long. So, I'll take your word that 2012.
I don't remember on that exactly. One,
so, yeah. But well, no, it makes yeah. sense, though, because, yeah. I mean, well, and then it had to have been around at least that long because I remember taking master classes around 2013. and some of the classes were on, I think, Blackboard.
Blackboard,
maybe.
Sure.
Blackboard, yeah.
And then I feel like there was some stuff in Canvas that at that time as well. Yeah. So, but sorry, sidetrack there. So, so please continue.
So, well, it's just a way to organize your content, and it keeps kids all in one place. So there's nothing worse than the kids having to click on tabs and go to a different tab and then move to a different tab and then go back to a different tab and back, whereas Canvas or playing a YouTube video and they get the ads or what's up next, super annoying. So by putting everything in Canvas in an organized way, it keeps kids all in one place and you have it ready for next year.
Yeah.
So that's actually my favorite thing about Canvas is next year.
Canvas is the most robust learning management system I've ever used, but I will tell you, it uses more skills than any other LMS I've ever used. I mean, I never thought I would be using my HTML skills to build pages inside my learning management system. I'm like, this is above my pay grade.
But you don't have to, but you can if you want. And that's the beauty of Canvas. You can use a template and just pop some content in. Or, like Dana said, you can use HTML and get all fancy, and they just add.
Yeah, and that was my experience with it I used it as an instructor for staff development virtually, and it was like I could do super bare bones, like stuff, and that was my focus was more on like read the articles, have a discussion, that kind of things. But I know just a little bit. I played with it that I could have done way more. So I think. Have you seen that kind of that evolution in your own, it sounds like in your own experience with using it, or are there things that are like, okay, that's a great new feature, but maybe it's not relevant to most people?
No, I love every time a new feature comes out, I'm out to try it. In fact, something was released last week, but they pulled it back because it was glitchy. So, but they're like that. They're really responsive. They just came out with an icon maker that's built in. And so I create a lot of professional development courses. And one of the things I did in one of my courses is I have think about it, do, explore, the three E's or whatever it is for the course. But I have icons that are, the think, the do, the submit. And so I previously had to create the icons in Google Slides or Canva or, and bring them in, and now I can do that right inside. And then they're consistent for, every page in the course. So I create page templates and then I just keep using them throughout the course. I can automate stuff. So my participants have to work in order. They don't get their last module, which is their certificate, until they do everything else. And once I set up the automation, I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to think about it. I know when stuff has to be graded. I'm not chasing kids down or adults, right, for work.
Or collecting papers.
Or collecting papers. They can submit everything right there. I'm not getting 1,000 emails because it has an inbox. I tell my students, my adults, not so much, but my youth, hit me up through the inbox if you want a response, right? And then I've got a record of everything they said I said. And a new feature coming out. I don't know if it's released yet. How you can email students who, so from the grade book, say you've got some students that didn't turn in an assignment, you can email just those students and say, hey, I see you're missing X assignment. Please go ahead and turn that in. Or I see you didn't do so well. Please, do it again. So you could target students that got between a 1 and a 5 out of 10 or something, right? So you can target students. So they're adding that it'll email parents too. They're observers, so parents can observe their kids. Now parents are going to get those emails, so that's pretty exciting, and it's all in one place.
You were talking about icons, and I'm pretty passionate about the design, because when you find a template, like, you spend a lot of time on that baby, and then you get the matching quiz and the matching discussion, and then use it for the whole course. But every time I do a different course, I like to tweak it up. Yep. So I become a vast consumer of copyright free icons. So whenever I find icons online, I'm like, oh, I'm going to save those. And I have all these folders in my drive with all these icons. And whenever I design a course, I'm like, which icons will I use for this one?
So now you can pick it from the icon menu, change the color, change the shape, change the...
Yeah, I didn't know about that one either, because we have some of the new updates. Like, they just did some great updates with the Google assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Still not perfect, especially when you're doing masters and stuff like that. But you can see them in SpeedGrader now.
Yes.
And new quizzes just showed up in the to-do list. So there's some great things coming down the pike.
Yeah. So now there's a few more things that some listeners may not be familiar with. You mentioned SpeedGrader, quizzes, and Google. So I do want to kind of stick with the Google a little bit, though, because you mentioned Google Assignments. That's something that's in there, but it's not just Google that has capabilities within Canvas. Microsoft 365 is also in there as well. Now, Andrea, is your district a Google district then, I assume? You mentioned Google Classroom before.
Google. Yeah.
You're a Google district? Okay.
Yeah.
So I did some training last summer. I went to Marietta, Lake Elsinore area and provided some professional development there for the teachers there that were going into their new school year. And one of the things they requested was they needed training on Canvas, but they were a Microsoft district. So I'm like, well, I can do training on Canvas, but I got to do a little digging on the Microsoft. So I had to do my research, but that's still pretty robust as well. So, but since you're both familiar with the Google side of things, talk a little bit about like how Google kind of integrates with Canvas.
Well, there's this awesome integration feature. When you build an assignment, you can automatically attach a Google Doc onto it or a Google slide deck. And just like Classroom, the kids can't lose it. It's always attached right there. And they can open it and they can go back to it and they can work on it. And then once they submit it, it's already submitted. Now, one of the reasons our teachers didn't really like using these was because you had to grade it in a different grading platform. You couldn't grade it inside Canvas. And we had some trouble with the grades coming in sometimes, or the minimum Fs. I don't know if your districts, we do minimum Fs. Yeah. So we would have to do that manually. But whenever we ask for these components in Canvas, they're quite responsive and Google's responsive and they're working together. So now it's especially important with the littles, like elementary and even middle school. They lose their assignments. So because they're attached, it's just they click a button, the Google Doc opens up, they do their work, and they hit submit, and nobody loses anything.
And Ben, you were asking about elementary. So Canvas just released, really at the beginning of this year, Canvas for Elementary. And it's a slightly different interface, more user-friendly. Okay. So they have like a homeroom class. So they have a banner at the across the top, and then they have tiles for each class or each subject rather. So when I was doing the fifth grade, I ended up switching to Canvas because that's what I do. I had three tiles. I had language arts, I had math, and then I had creativity corner. And that was everything else. That was, you know, PE, music, art, whatever. And then we use Benchmark Universe in our district. So social studies and science were integrated with language arts. Okay. But so they had three tiles and it was like, okay, click on the math tile. And there was their assignments right there. Okay, let's go in the language arts tile. It's right there. So much more robust. Everything's in one place. You know, it's populated from our SIS, you know. So, and if parents are following their kids, they're following their kids forever in Canvas. I've had high school teachers go, why do I have 75 people in my class? You know, I'm like, you gotta look, they're observers. Well, I didn't tell them. They've probably been observing their kids since middle school, right? So, but it's one and done there.
So as we're talking about Canvas as an LMS, and I think in our experience, at least mine, as using it with adults as an instructor, you both have used it with students. Do you see any use for maybe teachers that are teaching face-to-face, can they still use those features of Canvas? Like how talk us through that. What might that look like?
Oh, I used it for face-to-face for, 5 years before we shut down for the pandemic. So I was always face-to-face.
Awesome. Okay.
So, and I put every single assignment, even if it was a paper pencil. So as a math teacher, I did a lot of manipulatives, a lot of hands-on conceptual development activities. But I would have the kids take pictures of their work and then explain their thinking. They would use Media Recorder to explain how they solved the math problem, right, from the textbook. Sometimes I'd have them take pictures of their homework, not a lot when we were face-to-face, but even if it was something, a paper pencil, a poster that they made, I would still put the grades into Canvas. I'd put a description, and then I'd take some snapshots of some of the student work and put it in with directions, because I still always had students that were absent, right, or needed to go back. Or like if we were doing circles and area and circumference, I'd maybe pop a few videos in there for future study. Like Dana was saying, the kids want more resources, so they didn't have to search for stuff. Maybe I'd put a little quiz in, little, 10 question, watch the video and here's 10 questions to follow up. And that was their homework instead of, 50 problems out of a book, right? Much more engaging. But it was all in one place. Again, it was all in one place. They weren't,
right,
searching for a zillion links.
Yeah, you mentioned the pictures of work, and that is something that when we were, especially in the shutdown, that was something we relied on heavily, was mm-hmm. we had different math assignments where the main assignment would be like on Google Slides, and you could show your work using the speaker notes section of the Google Slides or whatever, or you could open up a Google Doc and then do your work in there and attach it. Or some kids, they just wanted to do it on paper. And our biggest thing was like, we can't accept your work with just the answer there, because like, how do we know that you actually did the work at this point? You didn't just, type the equation into Google search, right, and then boom, here it is or whatever. So, but that was an option that kids could do where they could work it out on paper and pencil. They could snap a picture of their phone and then upload it into Canvas, where, I know I can't speak for other LMSs or Google Classroom, but I don't remember Google Classroom being able to do that. Mm-hmm. I remember you being able to attach files like PDFs and whatnot, but I don't necessarily remember just pictures as being part of that. So that was something we relied on very, very heavily. And then just backtracking just a little bit, you were talking about now there's Canvas for littles or Canvas for elementary.
Canvas for elementary.
Right. I was not aware that was a thing now, but I think back to my son was in kindergarten during pandemic year. My daughter was in third grade, and both of their teachers had the most incredible Canvas homepages where I don't know if they worked with your grade level teams or if they did those on their own or whatever, but that's essentially what it was. You open up their homepage and there were icons, tiles, mm-hmm. pictures, whatever you want to call them, of here's the language arts one, here's social studies, here's PE, here's health. There's all these different ones where my kindergartner, after 2 days of kindergarten, knew exactly where he had to go, mm-hmm. because he just knew that once he logged into his computer, he went to Clever and then hit the Canvas icon in Clever, and then that was the first thing that popped up, was that homepage. And the teacher, they had a Google Meet icon on there as well. That was the first thing, like it said, click here, first thing. And then the teacher, once they got in that Google Meet, they said, okay, we need to go to our math one now. So then they would go back to that one, click on the math one, and boom, there it was.
Yep.
So I don't know how much work they put into that. I can imagine what they put into it. Because that's one thing, Dana, you kind of mentioned this earlier. Maybe it was before we were recording, but how you can look at a Canvas course that a teacher's put together. And Ben, you kind of talked about this as well. You can do something very bare bones with just text or something like that, or you can make something very elaborate, something very beautiful. And these teachers, that's what they did. They did that, but it was also for the ease of little mm-hmm. kids being able to do it. But that goes to high school though, too. Like I only had to do one Canvas course myself this year because I only taught one course on my own. But that was one thing, like, I didn't want it to be text heavy. Yeah. It had to have icons to where, like, this is where you need to go check your grades. This is where you need to go, because in our district, you have your grades in Canvas, you have your grades in our student information system, and they sometimes sync up, sometimes they don't, depending on if our grade pass back works or not. So, it just really depended. So, but having, rather than just saying like, if you want to check your Infinite Campus grades, please click here and then put like a hyperlink. No, I just put an Infinite Campus icon right there. Yep. Boom, that's what it was. So,
yep.
But that's really nice to hear that now they have that Canvas for elementary that just makes it that much easier, because all teachers are overworked. Mm-hmm. Elementary teachers especially are overworked.
And that just goes to Canvas seeing a need and addressing it. They saw what they saw what these amazing teachers were doing, and they decided to make it easier for them. But you're right. They knocked it out of the ballpark during COVID when this was necessary. But now I'll never go back. And my goal, and I won't have it the first year, but my goal is to keep building that course and making it more robust so that if a student is absent, there is no reason why they should miss 1 minute of class because everything is in there. Yes, they'll have to make it up. Yes, they'll have to go watch some videos, but we don't, what did I miss in class? Mm-hmm. That's not going to be a thing anymore if you have a good Canvas shell created.
And I know a lot of teachers that are, you know, back to in person are recording just a 5 minute recap of the class for the day. You know, remember today we talked about blah, blah, blah. And here's a quick little, you know, tutorial on what we did. And then they're posting that in their Canvas course. So students, even students that were in class, I mean, I don't know about you, but I often need to hear things multiple times before I remember them, right? Our students are the same way. Canvas just provides that. But Kyle, you were talking about students taking pictures of their work and submitting it. Long before the pandemic, I would have kids record. I had iPod touches in my classroom. And the kids would do, we called it over the shoulder recording. So one student would hold the iPod touch and record their partner solving a math problem. And that was the assessment. And then they would switch. But collecting all those, we did AirDrop. We did put it on. It was horrendous collecting all those. Now in Canvas, I can just use Media Recorder. And my district just got this year a Studio. They can do it straight in Studio. And using their phone so I can see their work as they're writing, and it's all in one place.
I have used Studio, but and I'm not a huge fan of external tools, even though they try to make them as good as possible. I try to stay in Canvas when necessary, but the one that I have to use is Flipgrid.
I
got to give it up to Flipgrid. I just love, and some of the kids hate it, and I let them put the emojis on their face or whatever, but there are some kids that will go the extra mile just because they want to record it and post it.
And that's embedded in Canvas too, right there on a page. Everybody can see it. They're not going anywhere else.
Well, and that's the thing is that, you know, we touched on Google and Microsoft tools as being integrated in Canvas. Now we mentioned Flipgrid, but there are, I guess it probably depends on your district, which ones are accessible or whatnot, but there's a section where you can go into for third-party tools that have integrations. And sometimes it's as easy as just clicking on it and boom, it's connected. There's other ones where you got to go in and go find like a security secret key or something like that. And I mean, and that right there, I mean, for 90% of teachers, as soon as they see that, they're like, nope, never mind. I mean, and a lot of times all it is a simple Google search. I think the one I feel like I remember this, maybe I'm dreaming this, making up or whatever, but I feel like Edpuzzle was one where you needed that.
Yep.
And all I did was Googled Edpuzzle Canvas key. And boom, it was right there, and I was able to add it in there. But there are those things that can be a little cumbersome with it. But you know, overall, if once you get going on it, it's okay. But now,
yeah, a lot of it is dependent on what your district pays for,
right?
Because like we use the school, one of the schools I'm supporting uses Quizzes, Quizzz, and they paid for it, so we have the integration. If you don't pay for it, you don't have the integration. So
I would really like that one. I use Quizzes all the time.
It automatically pops that grade in the grade book and it updates every time you take it. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I don't have that, but I just use it for Fast and Furious. So
So.
I do as well. Yeah.
Now, Dana, you and I have traded war stories, quote unquote, about this a little bit. So Andrea, I'm kind of curious with you. So two-part question. A, is Canvas a requirement for your colleagues in your schools? And B, was there pushback on having to use it and the learning curve that came with it when that became a requirement?
So technically, yes, Canvas is a requirement for secondary. But there are teachers still not using it. And at the moment, principals have the flexibility to decide. So, you know, I'm hoping it's, I don't like the fact that some, it is a high learning curve. Let's be honest. The first year using Canvas is hard. It is a steep, steep on ramp. But once you get going, then future years are much easier because, as Dana said, you just copy it, copy your course, update it a little bit. But we've had some pushback from teachers that don't want to use it, don't want to learn. And it's hard, but for kids, so all our community colleges in California use Canvas. Most of our UCs, I think all the Cal States now use Canvas. That's part of getting kids college and career ready. And if you've got some kids in Google Classroom, some in Canvas, some, there's still a few teachers doing, I don't know what. So kids have to go to all different places to get their content, right? To get their courses. And Canvas puts everything in one place. And I think it's really important that everybody just jump on board. I mean, I'll just say it out there. It's because it is better for kids. And a lot of the teachers I'm working with are started using Canvas this year, this one particular school that I'm supporting. And it's hard. It's hard, but they're learning and they're trying things. And, you know, buttons don't always work. They don't always publish the assignment, you know. But overall, in the long run, it's going to be better.
I do agree with you. But with that, I think schools need to do a better job of providing resources, maybe having a full-time ed tech coach whose job is to help start designing at least the templates, mm-hmm. like go meet with them, right. Be like, I want 5 units. This one has 3 lessons. This one has 2 lessons. I want an assignment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I'm doing that all day, I can build that for you. And then I have this beautiful shell. Now you just need to go put in your content.
Right.
That would save so much time just to have a person there. Mm-hmm. This is it. I do think Canvas is too steep for some mm-hmm. teachers when they are experts in the classroom.
Yeah.
So we need to keep pushing districts to understand they need to put the support behind it to get those kids ready for those future skills.
Well, we've had such a problem this year with professional development, you know, with no subs.
Right, right.
So I was supposed to do pullout days and work with groups of teachers this year on Canvas and other things. And there was just no subs.
Right.
You know, they're subbing for each other and covering classes and we're mm-hmm. covering classes. I mean, I taught 5th grade for 2.5 months, right? So that's been really hard. And, you know, asking teachers to do one more thing.
Right.
You know.
But I think to Dana's point too, like that, and both your points about that steep learning curve, I also see this as a great opportunity when you have in an elementary, if I have 5 fourth grade teachers, great. You guys can work together. You're going to teach, you're all teaching ELA, you're all teaching benchmark reading series. Great. We can build one thing, and that grade level can do that. And what a great opportunity to do that PLC process as you collect data in that format. Then you have, you know, a great way, tools to discuss it and stuff. But I agree with you. It can't be like this teacher over here is doing their own, and then this teacher down the hallway is teaching the same grade, but they're building a whole separate class. You're right. That's never going to work.
No, the effective teams I see, they divvy up the work, and then in they build like a master class. So everybody's a teacher in the master class, and then they just copy the content into their own courses. And that is one thing that we're going to be doing next year is pushing out some shells. Our shells are going to be very simple, and then we do have some templates in Canvas Commons where you can get lessons. But be careful when you download stuff. You never know what you're getting. But you can bring in lessons. Like I found a really cool lesson for my summer school class last year, but I was too optimistic. And you should always download stuff, or import is the better word, into a sandbox course. So most districts allow you to create your own courses. So a sandbox is where you just create content, play with it, try it out, you know, enroll a fellow teacher as a student. So you can see what it looks like from the student point of view, see how things work before you then import it into your real class. And that way you can play with stuff and try stuff out, because there's a lot of good content out there that other people have shared.
Now, you are both very knowledgeable, very handy with Canvas. So listeners need to be able to connect with you a little bit so they can maybe talk more about this. So, I mean, and I know not all listeners are, you know, in Canvas districts or anything. And, you know, maybe a few listeners realize what the topic is today and they stop listening at this point. I don't know. But for those that are still listening, where can they connect with both of you? And what resources do you have out there that are available so people can learn more about Canvas or or get questions answered from the two of you?
So I'm on Twitter at The Digital Teach, and I have a YouTube channel. I will put it in the show notes, but I do Canvas tips of the day. Just little, most of them are like 2 minute little clips on little helpful things. To either get you going with Canvas or to tweak your class or new features. Haven't posted recently because my other job responsibilities have been taking a bit of time, but I post those in, I post them on YouTube, but then also in the announcements in Canvas so that teachers in my district can access them easily. And then I also am hosting a book club. There's a new book out called Canvas for Dummies and written by Marcus Painter and Eddie Small. They both, they're both were classroom teachers and Canvas administrators, and now they've both gone to work for Instructure, who owns Canvas. But while I'm not thrilled with the name, I don't like the dummies thing, but once I read it, but I remember doing DOS for Dummies way back in the day. So, hey, you know, it's the book talks not just about some of the how-tos. There's a lot of clicking. You know, Canvas does have a lot of clicking, and I know people hate all the clicking, but it's, you know, the price you pay for the good stuff, right? But I'm doing a book club, and you can find that on Instructure Live. So Instructure does a ton. They have a ton of support for teachers. So our second session is going to be in June. But go to Instructure Live. Anybody's welcome to join us. And we're just talking about the book and less about the clicks, but more about the pedagogy behind the clicks, right? And why you're doing things a certain way. You know, Dana mentioned the accessibility checker. I never had tried that. I'd never used it my first probably 2 years of using Canvas. And I realized tables are not good. Don't use tables. Screen readers can't read them, right? My alt tags were image 154, you know. That's not very helpful. So there's a lot of little things built into Canvas that that I think people will find really helpful. Kyle, you probably love Immersive Reader, right? Now available.
Oh, absolutely.
Pages and assignments built right in. You don't have to go anywhere else or use an external tool.
Yeah, right? I remember somebody coded the Immersive Reader Chrome extension. I thought that was the greatest thing ever. And then, but yeah, it's built right into Canvas, which is very, very nice.
So, and then, well, I don't know if I'm going to be doing it. Last fall, I was a Panda Pro, which is Instructure had teachers on call, or had, I don't know, Canvas experts on call that teachers could call, could make appointments with to get help with their Canvas courses. It was totally free. And then I guess InstructureCon is coming up too, and I'll be presenting on UDL and Canvas. InstructureCon is also free and it'll be virtual. So I'm around.
How about you, Dana?
You can find me on Twitter at Dana_Cooney. The two biggest things I did is I'm a leader in Global GEG, the Global Google Educator Group, and we did a two-part series last fall, and we did a three-part series the year before that, and we'll probably do it again towards the beginning of school. We usually do a beginner and an advanced. I have learned so much in the last year. You know, just when you think you know something, you're like, oh my gosh, I have to do another one because I just learned all this great stuff. And I took advantage of the Panda Pros when I was working on some stuff. Because it's a one-on-one. And finally, I get to talk to somebody who knows these upper level things that are harder to find on YouTube. But keep an eye out. I'll probably be doing another one closer to school getting ready. And I love getting together with teachers. So if you reach out, I am always there.
Awesome. Well, that definitely people should reach out to you because I think it's a great platform, and the little tiny bit that I used it, I just think it was, I didn't even touch the surface of, like, I was super excited because I could do icons, but you're right, I had to go find them on something else. And so it is a great platform. And I think one thing, you know, coming out of the last couple of years is that idea that you can embed these tools virtually. This is how kids respond well to this, and it's a great tool to have. So it's awesome that people are in-person learning but still using these tools.
And as a disclaimer, this is not endorsed by Instructure or Canvas. It was just something that a lot of districts and schools around the country have embraced this program, and we just happened to have a conversation at Spring Q with two people that are very, very passionate about it, and it became this. So Dana and Andrea, we can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your busy schedules to talk about this stuff.
But if Instructure wanted to throw some swag, I'd wear a new shirt.
Their reps at Spring Q like 4 years ago were wearing these, I think it was them. They were wearing hockey jerseys with like the Canvas logo on it. I'm like, I kind of want one of those. That's pretty sweet.
So. Yeah, I have a Canvas lightsaber from Spring Q.
Oh, that works too. Nice. But,
I mean, I am really passionate about Canvas, but I think it's because it makes teaching easier. Once you figure it out and get on the on-ramp, and I'm all for anything that makes less work for teachers, right? Because as teachers, we work really hard, and I want to spend more time connecting with my students, whether they're youngsters or adults, than I want to be grading or even creating content. So if I can do it once and be done, you know, once and tweak it, that's all the better. It gives me more time with my students. So.
For sure. Well, thanks again. Obviously, we're stoked to be able to bring this together. And we look forward to people being able to connect with you. And speaking of that, we do want you to keep this conversation going and share your thoughts on today's topic. And you can do that by emailing us at info@beeredupodcast.com. Tweet at us at beeredupod and then use #beeredupod. You can hit us up on Facebook at beeredupodcast. That's all one word. Follow us on Instagram at beeredupod, and then you can subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can watch episodes as they are live stream as we are recording them before they hit your podcast feeds. And you can do that at bit.ly/beeredu YouTube. And then again, make sure you're following Dana at Dana_CUNY and Andrea at The Digital Teach on Twitter. Leave us a review wherever you listen so more people can find the show. And then Ben, if they want to be a guest on the show, just like Dana and Andrea, what do they have to do?
All you have to do is go to our website, that's beeredupodcast.com, and you can just click on the contact and subscription info link, and then you complete the guest form. We'll get you in the queue. We love to have you on the show to talk, you know, what are you passionate about in education? And speaking of people that are passionate in education, Kyle, you shared a little bit of some of your writing that's on School Rubric, and School Rubric does feature the BeerEDU podcast. So their mission of School Rubric is to help schools, educators, parents, and students tell their stories so that stakeholders make the best choices about enrollment. So go to schoolrubric.org and you can find all kinds of great content, not just what Kyle wrote. And we are also part of the Codebreaker podcast network. So go check out codebreaker.edu.com. You can find amazing content like Teachers Talking Teaching, Student-Centered World, STEM Every Day, Teachers on Fire, My EdTech Life. Just so many great educational podcasts. So check both of them out. And this is now the part where Dana and Andrea, if you've listened to the show, Kyle has a learn about for us. So we're kind of going backwards, Kyle.
Yeah, we're starting to recycle some topics a little bit because when you're on episode 128, the topics become a little bit harder to find. So
shockingly, beer is kind of somewhat simple in some ways. It's complex, but somewhat simple.
Indeed. So, but we decided to revisit one of our favorites today, and that is the IPA. So, you know, we've talked about IPA on this show plenty of times. You and I are both very big fans of it. Yes. My beer tonight was a double IPA. So what does that even stand for? First of all, it stands for India Pale Ale. So, I mean, it's easier to say IPA so you don't hear people say, like, I had a double India Pale Ale tonight, so or anything like that. So now these were originally created during the British colonial era. the beer that was being shipped across the world, especially to India, was not making the trip. It was spoiling before it got there. So what they started to do, they started to experiment a little bit, and they realized that if you add extra hops to a traditional pale ale, it acted as a preservative, and the beer would actually make it to India, hence the name India Pale Ale. So that's kind of where that came from. But what we know as IPAs today are a lot different than what they were there. So then the ABV on IPAs today is typically a lot higher than what it used to be. You get into double digits on some of your IPAs these days. And even though they were more highly hopped than pale ales back then, today's IPAs are even higher than that. And there's a distinct difference between an American IPA and an English IPA, which we've talked about that on different episodes before as well. So now this became popular in the United States in the late 1990s. So craft brewers, especially one of our favorites, Sierra Nevada, they started to kind of bring back the IPA. It wasn't necessarily a dead style, but it was one that wasn't as popular as it once was. So it really made it come back in the late 90s, and now it's one of the most popular styles in the world. And there's a lot of different types of IPA. So you've got black IPAs, which are ones that are dark roasted malts, kind of like your porters and your stouts, but then they're really heavily hopped. So I enjoy a black IPA every now and then. They're hard to find, but they're very good.
They are.
Brut IPAs are ones that are relatively new. You think brut, kind of like champagne?
Like
very bubbly, very dry. Right. And fun fact, I did not know this when I looked at this. The way they get them like that, they add these special enzymes that remove more of the sugar and add carbonation to the beer.
Oh.
Yeah. Did not know that. So I guess
I'd have to go back and look and see if I've had a brut IPA.
I don't think I've had many. I mean, like I said, they're kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
And then you've got your double IPA like I had. These are ones that they're highly hopped, obviously. Mine, again, was 100 IBU tonight. Over 7.5% ABV is typical on a double IPA. Your triple IPAs are even higher. Those tend to be your double digit, like 10% ABV.
Yes.
And then those ones also, the IBU, like you're getting over 100 with some of those triple IPAs. Another one you may see is a West Coast style IPA.
Right.
These are ones where the malt character is a little bit lower and it's like hops. Like that. Like you're drinking that hop one for hop flavor. You know, a very good example of that would be Sierra Nevada's Torpedo. That is the quintessential West Coast IPA right there. Then you've also got the white IPA, which another one that's not real popular, but it's kind of a combination of an American IPA and a Belgian style wheat beer.
Yes.
So those ones are kind of rare, but they're good. Well, and then the big one that's really popular that I'm almost starting to refer to these as gateway IPAs.
That's start with an H.
The hazy IPA, the New England IPA, the juicy IPA, whatever you want to call it. So they're citrusy, they're floral. They're not very bitter. You know, juicy is a good way to put it. I mean, sometimes you look at these things, they look like orange juice and they taste and
they're
like orange juice.
Yes. And they're usually ones with a lot of fruit involved in that style.
They're hazy in appearance. They don't have that clarity like a typical beer does. And then some of them, they take it to another level. They add lactose to give it a creaminess to it. They call those milkshake IPAs. So that's a phase that was real big about 2-3 years ago. But I'm not seeing as many of the milkshake IPAs these days.
No, I'm thinking through. There's a handful of people that are still making them. But and if you go to a good solid brewery that you know does a wide variety of beer, chances are they've either have one or they've done one before. I'm thinking I think Lead Dog had one, didn't they?
Lead Dog would have several at a time I don't remember seeing any on the tap when I was in Reno a few months back. I don't know if that's because of the merger with Mammoth Brewing Company or if it's just that the style just isn't as popular. I'm not sure,
but. And some breweries will not go with that, and they'll just go with a standard. Like I always think about Great Basin up here, Icky. That's their standard IPA.
Icky IPA. That's another great example of a West Coast IPA.
Classic
right there,
West Coast. Yes.
Yep. I know we did the IPA. I think way back on episode 2 or 3.
That's an early one. Yeah.
It was a real early one. So So we decided to revisit, and there you go.
Well, there it is. It is my favorite style of beer. So.
I would say it's mine as well. So I drink a lot of IPAs. So that's it. Episode 128.
We're all good. Dana and Andrea, thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing with us, you know,
thanks
your knowledge.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and listeners, we have to thank you as always. And until next time, may the malts and the hops be with you.
Right on.